This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
All right, welcome into the second hour. We have a lot to get to here over the next 55 minutes. We'll dive into college football, some of the line moves that we have seen up to this point, the bigger ones, smaller ones, and why maybe they have moved in that direction. And, of course, a little bit more in the National Football League yesterday. We didn't get a lot of time to look at the look-ahead lines and the adjustments from those look-ahead lines to this week's worth of games and a look into college hoops. And that's where we begin here this hour. But before we get to that, I want to note some pieces of breaking news in the world of sports, right? First off, we do have an update on what is going on with the Baltimore Ravens, or at least a clearer picture here from Adam Schefter. Ravens have had 5 players, 4 staffers test positive for COVID this week. Thursday night's game, according to Schefter, is still on. They're playing the Steelers on Thursday night, of course, Thanksgiving night. But one source warned that further positives could mean postponing it. So Schefter, with the potential door there, opened that this could be postponed. And remember, that's pretty massive, right? Because if that's the case, we're talking about the dreaded Week 18 in the National Football League. And if that is indeed the case, then opening the door even further for the potential that 8 teams make it into the postseason, as opposed to just 7, with the one getting the bye, it would be 8. And then winner, of course, take all and move on from there. So the Steelers' last look were a 4-point favorite with a total of 45. And we do know that from updated reports yesterday, running back, one of the hardest hit positions for the Ravens in terms of the positive COVID tests, J.K. Dobbins and Mark Ingram, among those who would test a positive, which would mean if this game goes on, seemingly one Gus Edwards would take a majority of the snaps at running back. And doing how important that running game is, considering how bad this offense has been, especially with Lamar Jackson pulling the trigger and not really looking too hot. So again, Ravens, 5 players, 4 staffers test positive for COVID. Any more positive tests, we could see this game postponed. Other things to keep an eye on here, it does look like Tennessee basketball has indeed shuttered its doors for a little bit. They have extended their shutdown and pausing all team activities. From a release from the team today, after receiving Monday's COVID-19 test results, Tennessee men's basketball program extending its pause on team activities. Volunteers will not travel to Indianapolis for next week's Jimmy B Classic, where they were scheduled to face top-ranked Gonzaga. Tennessee also will not play at Notre Dame on December 4th, a game that had been reported but was never officially announced due to the contract not yet being finalized. And one more note from this release, that barring any additional setbacks, the program aims to return to action on Saturday, December 5th, when its first game currently set for December 12th against Cincinnati. Head coach Rick Barnes had been diagnosed with the virus in isolation at home, experiencing very mild symptoms. So, Tennessee basketball, the latest program of many in college hoops to close the doors, extend their pause here a little bit, and we have seen multiple instances of this going forward. Certain teams, right, the Arizona State-Baylor matchup, which we were expecting yesterday or tomorrow, not going to go down. Still have question marks about a program like a Colorado State, who is set to take on Cal. They, of course, last week were one of the multiple teams who had to put their program on pause with what is happening around there with COVID-19. So these results and these this news is going to continue to come out, and it's going to come out pretty quick. And we did have one more game canceled today, which I'll pull up and find out which one that was. But there was one more college basketball game. The Richmond game. There it is. The Richmond game was canceled earlier today as well. So these will continue to come down as you did, of course, throughout the season. And like I said with Wes yesterday, if you expected or if you thought that college football was a little chaotic, I would assume college basketball, we are in for a completely new ride. So with that, let's take a look at Wednesday, because we do have a full slate. We were supposed to start at 6 a.m. San Francisco, and Townsend was one of the games that we were supposed to see early. That one is not going to happen either. But it is a slate full of games that are very much worth watching, very much worth taking in from a betting perspective, just to learn about a couple of these teams. There is your top 25 games at this point right now. Barely scratches the surface of some of the teams we're going to be able to see tomorrow. I wanted to start with one of these top 25 teams. You see it right there kind of near the bottom. Charleston taking on North Carolina. You see the at two, by the way. It is a true road game for Charleston. Tar Heels a 17-point favorite with a total of 142.5. And it's a Charleston program that is entering a new era, right? Grant Riller, 21.9 points per game. One of the better players that Charleston has seen. And it's time now, moving on, because eligibility is all done. But this is a really balanced team. It's a team that will play relatively small at times, right? 3 guards on the court at one time. A little bit more balanced, really deep backcourt. So this matchup, right, from just a player perspective, what you're going to see on the floor for either teams really is going to be strength of a backcourt versus strength of a frontcourt, and which one's going to win out, right? You look at the Charleston. They do have some good pieces. Brevin Galloway, 11.3 points per game from last year. Fantastic shooter. Had 74 three-pointers made a season ago. Also a really good on-ball defender. 69, nice, steals a season ago as well. So can get on some of their better backcourt players. North Carolina, we'll get to that in a second. And match up relatively well with them from a defensive standpoint. Also a really good shooter. Zepp Jasper, likely to be their lead point guard. Fantastic on-ball defender as well. Kind of the theme you're going to see with Charleston is that defensively they should be pretty good. Obviously, the mismatch of going up against a team like North Carolina with its size is going to be something to behold. And you also have a guy like Peyton Willis, who comes in, grad transfer from Minnesota for Charleston, too. So for a team that loses four starters from last year's team, including Riller, who scored pretty much 22 points per game, now this is the best way to put it, right? Like, this is the best way to do it for a team that's kind of entering this new stretch for its program. Yeah. Having said that, too, the matchup that I can't wait to watch is going to be like a Galloway matching up with this backcourt. Remember, North Carolina, Caleb Love, RJ Davis, both members of this fantastic recruiting class for North Carolina, but it's a really young backcourt that you expect to see for the Tar Heels. And so how you match up with a experienced backcourt, a backcourt that is going to have three guards out there at one time, all three that can defend relatively well or all plus defenders, does that keep Charleston in a game here where they're catching 17 points? I would think that there is a slight edge just from an experience standpoint, from how good they play defensively when it comes to these backcourts matching up, because you don't know in an offseason like this, right, how young guys, as talented as they are, how young guys really respond to an offseason in which they went through against a team that has kind of been together for a while with their role players and then has made deep runs in its postseason tournaments and its conference, right? But having said that, North Carolina could have a massive, massive advantage up front. Right? Size, of course. Charleston's roster, probably weakest in the front court overall, right? You're kind of putting it together with guys who are sitting around 6'7". I do have a dude on the roster who's standing at 6'11", like a real true big, but not as skilled as the bigs that you're going to see out there for North Carolina, right? And a North Carolina team that will more than likely throw two 6'10 guys out there at once. And it's not just like stick-in-the-mud guys who don't really move and don't face the basket. These are skilled big guys that you're going to see on the floor. Garrison Brooks was phenomenal within 10 feet of the basket last year. Can really hammer the boards as well at 8.5 rebounds per game. You saw that tick up from his freshman to his sophomore year, and the growth, I would think, only gets a little bit better for him there. And by the way, I noted yesterday that this was a North Carolina team that I consider to be a dark horse to win the ACC with Wes, and you see them there at plus 650 via DraftKings, by the way, those odds, to win that conference. This front court is a big reason why. They arguably have the best front court in the ACC right now, and it's not just Brooks. Armando Bacot has posted 11 double-doubles last season. You expect that he is going to make a leap as well. Brooks made the leap from his freshman to sophomore year, so Armando could potentially do the same. So I have a front court that has two 6'10 guys who are skilled with their games, who can play relatively well defensively against an undersized team in Charleston, who has one real true big who I think might have some trouble defending the skill of them offensively. But Charleston has a really talented, I think, backcourt, and a backcourt that can play relatively well, especially defensively against two young kids that are going to get a lot of minutes for North Carolina. What that means in terms of laying 17 is I find myself wanting to take 17 with Charleston, but this is more of a game that I really want to watch and take in, right? And I heard Newman's on with the guys who Follow the Money earlier today, talking about in a season like this, kind of taking it slow and taking in games a little bit more as opposed to really firing away. And I have made a couple of bets, which we'll get into momentarily, both futures-wise and for games on Wednesday. But this is a game that I'm really interested in watching because I do think North Carolina has an insanely high ceiling this year, especially in the ACC. With that front court, and it seems to be a massive advantage here against Charleston. By the way, too, I think this has the potential to be a slower pace game. Charleston, 295th in adjusted tempo last season. KP projects them at about 328th this year. So if they do get to maybe dictate the tempo there with the way that they can guard that backcourt, maybe this becomes a little bit of a slower game. Maybe we start to see that total tick down from 142.5. But for right now, no real moves. UCLA at San Diego State. So this is a game that I have bet open 2.5 with a total of 135.5. We see UCLA up to 3.5. I did lay 3.5 as opposed to the 2.5. So a little bit of point off in terms of value, but still comfortable laying this. There's a couple of reasons why, right? First off, these are two teams you don't want to call them opposites, right? But they're in situations that are obviously very different. San Diego State comes in losing a good chunk of the talent that they had from last year's team, right? Malachi Flynn, obviously, off to the NBA. KJ Fagan, eligibility done, enters the NBA draft. He's not with this team either. Yanni Wetzel, a big piece of this team, too. Big piece of a big reason why, of course, that this team had that undefeated run. Whatever it was it 26-0 before UNLV beat him at the AAS? Whatever it was, you know, UNLV ending that run at home. But to lose a player like Malachi Flynn, to lose his running mate like KJ Fagan, who was a really good on-ball defender, and Malachi Flynn, as we know, was a very skilled offensive player. Flynn led the team in usage, offensive rating, percentage of minutes played. You're dealing with a massive drop-off of offensive production if you're San Diego State, right? Now you get Mick Cronin and UCLA. The Bruins have a really big experience factor in their favor here in this game. Mick Cronin gets all five starters from a team that finished last season. Remember, their last 14 games, they were 11-3 straight up. They latched on defensively really well down the stretch. Five of their eight opponents under a point per possession, and actually four of those opponents under 0.9 points per possession is what the Bruins did last year. So we saw that real development from this UCLA team as the season ended last year. So you get all five of these starters back. The guys that you lose from last year's team, really not role players as the season went along, right? And we saw their minutes diminish. So this team is just, and I'm not talking about experience like seniors and juniors, right? Because there are a couple on here. But I'm just talking about experience as a unit. And this is one of the things that when we look at a season like this, I think is going to be really valuable, right? Teams that return not only a lot of starters, but depth players who all played together for a really long time. And you get that with UCLA. So I get a really good defensive team, a team with a lot of returning experience, taking on a San Diego State team that is missing a massive chunk of what they had last year. And we should be completely fair, right? You do still have Matt Mitchell is going to be a fine offensive player who tested the NBA draft waters, arguably one of the best players in the Mountain West Conference, which, by the way, San Diego State is favored to win at +170. But overall, the situation to me, when I look at it, I'm comfortable laying 3.5 with UCLA. I don't know if this number continues to go up, but I just don't know how good this San Diego State team is going to be. And I'll be up front, too. Like, in our guide, which, again, is out right now, vsin.com/subscribe, I did pick San Diego State to win the Mountain West. But I even note in there, the gap between San Diego State and the rest of this division has closed significantly. And Boise State, Utah State, UNLV, these are all going to be teams that are going to be realistically competing for a Mountain West title this season. And a big reason why is the losses in terms of production last year for San Diego State. So a couple of other games to get to. I'll go to the game that I did have a wager on here as well. So I did lay 3.5 with UCLA. I also took 3 with North Dakota State. So Nevada is who they're taking on. This is a neutral site game. This is over in Lincoln, Nebraska, Pinnacle Bank Arena. Nevada opened 2, got to 3 with a total of 144.5. And I should mention all these numbers that I'm mentioning from a side perspective, courtesy of Circo, put up some numbers yesterday on essentially the full slate of games that you're going to see on Wednesday. But with this Nevada team, again, kind of the theme here with some of these games that I'm playing, experience. And by the way, you see at least in terms of the pecking order of the Mountain West, what this looks like in the conference. Nevada 20-1 right now to win the Mountain West. This is a Nevada team that has to replace 4 starters, 5 of their top 6 scorers. Only 2 upperclassmen are on this roster right now. This is not a team that I think at this point is worth looking at from laying points. I'm actually kind of surprised that the number moved up. I thought, looking around at the numbers and seeing where they might end up, that this is going to be a team, Nevada, that might be a little bit of a fade early on. And look, this North Dakota State team on the surface, you only get 2 out of 3 guys back from last year's squad in terms of starters. You do lose a couple of guys, right? Vinny Shahid, Tyson Ward, 2 other significant contributors gone from this team. But look, you do have some seniors on this team and actually guys who have been a part of the North Dakota State program for a good chunk of it, right? Rocky Cruiser, a 10-point-per-game scorer. Tyree Eddy, Sam Griesel, 6.6 and 6.5 points per game respectively, but they've been part of this team. They've been part of a successful program here basketball-wise when it comes to North Dakota State. So I just get a team again where these guys were starters, but they were role players for a team taking on a Nevada team that doesn't have really anything coming back. And the last piece of this is, and this has been a conversation I've had with Matt Humans, it's been a conversation I've had with people, right, who cover the Mountain West. I just don't think Steve Alford's that good of a coach, right? You inherit so much from Musselman in that regime last year. And there is an argument to be made that last year they were relatively disappointing in certain spots. Now you're talking about an inexperienced roster. Yes, pretty much, you know, bringing in some guys, transfers as well. There is some stuff to like about the Wolfpack, but I just think they're going to be more often than not a team that I would like to play against, especially considering that Alford, I think, is at a little bit of a coaching disadvantage in more matchups than not. Also, I should note that St. Mary's and Memphis, this is one I really wanted to bet. I like this Memphis team. We'll get into details as to why in a couple of minutes. Thought Memphis -3 was going to be something I would be all over, except for by the time you got there, it was up to 5. Now we're sitting at Memphis -7 over St. Mary's. St. Mary's is a quality program. This is a good team for the most part, but this is, again, another team that misses so much from last year. Memphis potentially could be one of the best defensive teams in the country this year, and you get a big-time transfer in Landers Nolly, who's going to help you out offensively, something you really struggled with a season ago. I thought -3 was a really fair number to lay there with Memphis. Now we're talking up to -7 right now. All right, plenty left to get to in college hoops. We'll take a look at the futures for myself, what we're looking at in the big picture, and much more when we return here on The Edge. Grade 1 races the next 2 weeks are featured on this week's Ron Flatter Racing Pod. Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahee talks about Code of Honor's run and Friday's Clark Stakes and Performer's Bid to win next week's Cigar Mile. Super Screener creator Mike Shuddy previews this week's Clark and the Kentucky Jockey Club Stakes at Churchill Downs. VSiN's Vinny Maiulo handicaps races at Aqueduct and Del Mar. The RFRP will be posted Friday at VSiN.com/podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. It is sponsored by First Bet. So, tell you too, if you didn't know, as much as I do enjoy the NBA, I'm just kind of a hoops guy in general. So we will extend a lot of our coverage into college basketball as the season gets started tomorrow. If you were lucky enough, I guess, if you did enjoy The Edge with humans and I, you know that we had extensive hoops coverage in college basketball. It's why I, of course, helped out with the college basketball guide. On the side, I do cover UNLV Rebels basketball and Mountain West hoops. So do have an affinity for college basketball and basketball in general. So this won't be a basketball show, as football is king, and we do enjoy football here and do a relatively decent job of handicapping that sport, but we will have extensive coverage of college hoops as we go forward. So with that, well, let's take a look at the portfolio up to this point. And so I got 3 futures right now that I have going forward. And there's some teams that I like, and obviously teams I'm a little bit higher on, it seems, than others, and this isn't what I'll have at all, just it, you know, going forward, and have a smattering more as the season goes on. But I've noted the number and the shop at which I've got them, and we can discuss, you know, the teams forward. But let's start with Duke, right? Duke 18-1, got that number over at Circa. I do like this Duke team a lot, and actually I was the only one in the college guide that had Duke number one. What I liked, too, about our guide, by the way, because we had our top 50, it was humans, myself, Tim, West, and I believe Greg, who rated our top 50 teams. But we had all, you know, different teams that we liked in terms of the number one overall team. And I will say the same thing I said with West yesterday. I don't think there's really any question. At times, Mike Krzyzewski is a roll the ball out and let's see what's going on with this team, right? In terms of not a really like hardcore X's and O's coaching. But I like the makeup of this roster a lot. When you look at Duke in basketball today and what they have done with this roster in terms of recruiting talent and what they've done at certain positions, they have a glut of wings and 3-and-D guys, really, that will help them, I think, in the long run. And I think quietly what we have seen from Mike Krzyzewski, to give him some credit, is that certain teams of his over the last few years have really kind of steered into being a solid defensive team. Last year, Duke finished 12th in the country in overall defensive efficiency. The year before that, they finished 6th in the country in overall defensive efficiency. The year before that, they were 9th in defensive efficiency. They have had a really quality defensive program going over the last few years, and I think you've kind of seen that in the recruiting, right? You look at the players that they have going forward with this club, and I do think that there is a lot to like from that standpoint, and why you could continue to see that this team is going to be a really good defensive team. The defensive aspect of it starts with Jordan Goldwire, who I think is going to be pretty much one of their better on-ball defenders once we get to the actual season itself. When I talk about the 3-and-D wings that they have, Joey Baker comes to mind as well. Brakefield, one of the freshmen that they bring in, DJ Stewart, who is not so much a wing player but a two-guard who will perform very well. Henry Coleman, too, 6'7" kid who can play along the wing. High-energy work ethic kid. And so I think we're going to see another relatively elite defensive unit from Duke. Now, the real question is, right, where some of the offense is going to come from. I believe Jeremy Roach has the ability to be a pretty good offensive player. And then, of course, up front, Jalen Johnson, I think, could be a very skilled big man for them. When you look at what he did as a junior, 19.9 points, 11.4 rebounds, 6.2 assists as a big in high school. And as some have noted, probably the most college-ready kid among the freshmen that Duke are bringing in. So Duke, 18-1. Think they're going to have a pretty good year. I think they're going to be a pretty good team. They were my number one team in terms of the College Hoops Guide. I've mentioned this team before. I talked about them with Wes as well as you go back to them. Memphis at 70-1. And one of the things you do like, and this seems pretty simplistic in some of the handicapping, and it wasn't the only reason why, but this is a Memphis team coming off a year in which they were widely hyped. Right now it's quieted down a little bit. You get 4 out of 5 starters back. You get, as I mentioned, a massive transfer, I think, in Landers Nolly to help, 15.5 points per game, 5.8 rebounds in his last season at Virginia Tech, and you have potentially one of the better defensive teams in the country. Lance Thomas, DJ Jeffries, Malcolm Dandridge, these are all guys who are really good on-ball defenders who can really make Memphis, I think, something to behold when it comes to their defensive play. It was a team that last year finished 5th in overall defensive efficiency, and they have the capabilities of doing so and adding a skilled offensive player. And then UCLA, we went over everything with Mick Cronin's squad in that last spot when we were talking about their matchup with SDSU. Again, another good defensive team, and the theme here, at least outside of Duke, returning experience. Guys who played with this program last year. I think it's going to go a long way this year in an offseason from hell, which a lot of these kids, a lot of these programs really couldn't get together. So UCLA at 75-1 over at William Hill. We got plenty left to get to in football. It's The Edge here on VSIN. College Hoops Betting Guide, it's out. It's the perfect time to become a VSIN subscriber. Get the massive in-depth guide to all the teams, conferences, and impact players for this unique college basketball season. Well over 400 pages of analysis, man. It's totally worth it. It has predictions, insights, stats, and research from all of our VSIN basketball experts. Going to want to dive in before the first games tip off tomorrow. I, of course, wrote the Mountain West Conference preview, ranked my top 50 teams, along with guys like Tim Murray, Wes Reynolds, Matt Eumanns, Bruce Marshall, Greg Hoops Peterson. Get the Hoops Betting Guide plus everything VSIN has to offer every day of the basketball season all year round at 25% savings right now. Sign up today at VSIN.com/subscribe. Also, a selfish plug, next week we'll be off the show as we get started and get the work done on the NBA Betting Guide, which will be making its return at some point too. So I had a lot of fun putting that together last year. That was about, 130 pages or so. So we're looking to add to that and get some more information on a very short offseason for the association as the year is going to get started on the 22nd of December. One last note, too, on college hoops, because I should mention, right, we were talking about the futures that I had up to this point. Shopping around, obviously, is very key. Take Memphis, for example, right? If you're in a area that offers DraftKings or FanDuel, you can get Memphis at about 100-1, right? Here, William Hill had Memphis at about 30-1. Circa had Memphis at 70-1, right? These prices all vary. So, of course, it's an age-old, what is it? Is it the Beauty and the Beast thing? Tale as old as time? It's a tale as old as time. But shopping for the right number is always the way to go when it comes to investing in almost anything. In terms of sports betting. So with that, let's go to the National Football League because we didn't get a chance to analyze all of these games yesterday with the breaking news around the Baltimore Ravens, but we should discuss it because, of course, it's what we do with these look-ahead lines when it comes to the adjustments. So, again, to reiterate what we do, look-ahead lines from the previous week, which, by the way, week 13 look-ahead lines out today from the Westgate Superbook, so we'll be diving into those at some point, and the adjustments to the current week, why those adjustments were made, and if it's getting a little extreme. Now, first thing that sticks out to you, we should note that, again, this is from yesterday. The Giants are up to a 6-point favorite right now over the Bengals. So obviously we're talking about a 9-point adjustment from one Ryan Finley to Joe Burrow. If you remember yesterday's show, I am of the mindset that Joe Burrow is worth potentially 7.5 points. Chris Andrews and I talked about, and again, not worth, the difference between him and Ryan Finley, 7.5. That would put you at that 4.5. Chris Andrews even said when he was with us earlier, right, that he made the number Giants minus 4.5. Now that we're sitting at 6, this is entering territory where I'm kind of, I'm looking at Cincinnati or pass here. And look, as I had mentioned with Mr. Andrews, this is like kind of a crossroads here, right? Because you get a Bengals team who's missing their starting quarterback, who, of course, was extremely valuable to what they were doing this year, right? So you have that on one end. The massive loss of a quarterback who was the main reason why, at one point this season, the Bengals had covered 6 out of 7 games. On the other side, you get a Giants team that themselves are in the middle of a run in which they have covered 6 out of 7 games, right? They've won 2 straight. They've covered 4 straight. And so the power rating is kind of getting to a point where it's really high on the New York Giants, right? The market at some point has to catch up with how good this team is. It's been very undervalued. So you have both of these things really coming together in this spot, in my mind, to form a number that's a little too high here if we're talking about 6 for the New York Giants. And it does seem that 6 is going to be the ceiling here for this number, as 5.5s are starting to pop up and 5s are starting to be widely available now too. So if you got 6, good on you. I think this number should be 4.5. I think when you have both of those factors that I talked about kind of coming together here, this is where you're getting to a head where there is some value on betting Cincinnati. From Cincinnati -3 to the Giants -6 because of the injury to Burrow seems extreme. 4.5, you can get me. 6 is a little high, and thus you look at it from that perspective, and Bengals might be the side if you get back to 6. And that's, to me, that's like, and higher too, by the way, obviously. It's not just like 6 and dive in. If the number continues to climb in that direction, it's going to be worth it. But getting as high as 6, and the market even, as we can see, was like, all right, let's pump the brakes here a little bit. 6 is a little high. Let's bring this down back to 5.5, which is the highest number on the board right now. The other, which we glossed over really quickly, Cardinals at Patriots. Cardinals, it was a pick. Now Cardinals a 2.5-point favorite, depending on where you look around, but pretty much 2.5 across the board. Some spots 2.5 -120. As we should note, South Point here does not dabble in altering the vig, so you're looking at 2.5 flat, you know, -110 on both sides. So what I find so enthralling about this one is that if you look at it from just the perspective, we see this all the time, right? The adjustments based on results. And I've always cautioned against, like, you know, adjusting too heavy off of results. But you get a 2.5-point bump in the favor of the Cardinals, despite the fact that both of these teams are coming off of losses, right? Last week, Cardinals lost on Thursday night. It seems like a year ago, but they lost on Thursday night to the Seattle Seahawks. Offensively, didn't really have much going on. Didn't look as efficient as they have in weeks past. And the Patriots are coming off of their loss against the Houston Texans, right? Where, let's face it, the power rating got a little out of hand after back-to-back primetime wins. All of a sudden, you're laying 2 on the road against the Houston Texans, where you probably should not be. It should be more like Texans -3, which was what? Of course, the opening look-ahead number. But I digress. So now we get this spot with the Cardinals, whose defense in the past has looked a little shaky. We talked about that going into the Seattle Seahawks game, right, where they went over a 3-game stretch, giving up 32.6 points per game, over 6 yards per play, right? How they had won 2 out of 3 games, so they +2-point differential. They'd been playing with fire the entire time, and it kind of came to fruition, and you lost that game 28-21 on the road. Now you got to make the trip to the East Coast, take on the Patriots. The worry here is, and this isn't going to game I'm going to be in on, but the worry for me here is actually what worried me in that Houston Texans game. The Patriots have 2 weaknesses, right? It's their offense, which has been pretty shoddy and below average this entire year, right? The passing attack really opened up against Houston, which maybe it's a sign of things to come. Maybe it's a sign of taking over or taking advantage of a bad defense. But the Patriots have their own bad defense, right? They have their own secondary that is ranked in the mid-20s all year long if you looked at efficiency ratings. And again, that has been with a guy like Gilmore in the secondary. So that is the worry here for me. It's not going to be a game I touch. It's not going to be one that I look at and find inherent value in this number adjusting to 2.5, despite the fact that nothing's really changed for these two teams. But it is, I think, pretty interesting to see that the Cardinals go from a pick to 2.5, despite the fact that both of these teams are coming off of losses right now. And then finally, Seahawks at Eagles. This is pretty self-explanatory, right? Seahawks on the look-ahead line were a 3-point favorite, got up to 5.5 against the Philadelphia Eagles. This is an Eagles team that has shown you pretty much nothing this entire time when it comes to being worthy of investing in on a week-to-week basis and wagering on, right? Yes, you got the cover against the Dallas Cowboys. You shouldn't have. We know what happened on the fumble and all of that, you know, malarkey with Ben DiNucci on that Sunday night spot. Four straight games, which have gone under the total because of a struggling offense. And yes, you get the Seattle Seahawks, whose secondary has given up the most air yards in the NFL. Yes, you get the Seahawks making the trip east. But what have the Eagles shown that is really worth investing in at this point? And that's why you see this adjustment here. Speaking of adjustments, we will get to those in college football on the other side as we wrap it up. Welcome back in the last few minutes. A reminder, of course, check it out, the College Hoops Betting Guide, in-depth guide, all the teams and conferences, impact players as well for the upcoming college basketball season. VSiN experts, predictions, insights, stats, and research, and everything else VSiN has to offer as part of our package. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe today. That is VSIN.com/subscribe today. This is a guide that is packed, just jam-packed with information, over 400 pages of analysis in this guide. So I think it's definitely worth your time to sift through there as College Hoops get started tomorrow. Also a reminder for you too today, twofold. One, four players, five staff members for the Baltimore Ravens as that game continues to be in flux. Adam Schefter did report that if there are a few more positive tests, we could see this game postponed to that elusive Week 18 that we could potentially see. Also, Tennessee, the latest College Hoops program to postpone their activities. They will not be back in action, until December 5th, and they will not play again until about December 10th. So Tennessee putting everything on hold for a while as they try to clean up and get that program back to where it should be, at least in terms of COVID and health, things of that nature. So we do this every single week. Let's discuss it. College football line moves, right? Circa, of course, every single time, first to market. So it's a really good judge to see, again, like opening lines. You know, you'd be surprised when you talk to people who do like to bet on college football who don't really know where the number was when they opened up and where they obviously went. So it is a very good exercise to see where these numbers have gone and where they're going to end up and why they got there, right? And we do have some massive flips. Southern Miss at UAB, Southern Miss program, which kind of seems to be in a bad spot right now. UAB opened up as a 16-point favorite, got up to where it's at right now, UAB as a 20-point favorite. How about the swing between Central Michigan and Eastern Michigan? Central Michigan opens up as a 4-point favorite, and Eastern Michigan we're looking at right now laying 7. Which is a massive flip, and we'll double-check to see. I think my screen might have been off a little bit, so we'll gloss over that. I'm getting some updated information on that. I believe Central Michigan is actually up to the 7-point favorite, but I will double-check because I'm the one that sent in that graphic. Regardless, we'll move on to a couple. First off, UMass at Liberty. Liberty minus 43, now down to 38. Very big number. A Liberty program that is playing extremely well. Not surprising that a massive number like that would get bet down. Georgia Southern, Georgia State. Georgia State opens for Georgia Southern now, a 1.5-point favorite. And then we get to the game that I think is definitely worth looking at a little bit here, and that would be Georgia in this matchup against South Carolina. And one of the things that is really worth keeping track of during the week is, of course, the quarterback position for Georgia. We have waited for the longest time to see whether or not we are going to make the move here in Athens and go to, because his quarterback position has been a nightmare, JT Daniels. And sure enough, JT Daniels finally makes his first appearance against Mississippi State. What happens? You get a 31-24 win over the Bulldogs, but the quarterback play and the offense really takes off, right? 28 to 38, 401 yards, 73.7% completion, 10.6 yards per attempt, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. This has been a massive breath of life for Georgia in terms of their offense. It's something they've been missing. And look, I know Kirby Smart, got a little upset as to why people were questioning the fact that it took too long for JT Daniels to get under center. And it's something that a lot of people have been asking for weeks. And now, when you get all of a sudden that uptick in terms of their offense, you can kind of understand why people have been asking for this. And there are still questions to be answered. But until then, you can understand not only why Georgia opens up as an 18-point favorite over South Carolina, but why this has been bet up to 21. You have to wonder if the upgraded quarterback now, which seems pretty clear, and it's only one game, but if the upgraded quarterback, if it's legitimate, if it's real, and how much that improves this rating for Georgia. So from 18 now to 21, where we're at here at the South Point, and multiple other spots. Cincinnati at Temple, also worth noting here. Look, this Cincinnati team has been freaking awesome up to this point, right? From a defensive standpoint, they are one of the best teams in the country. Now laying 36 here in this spot against Temple. Temple, of course, one of the worst offensive teams in the country. They have had issues with their quarterback position as well. Anthony Russo has not played for a while because of some COVID issues, also a shoulder issue that held him back too. It has led to a Temple offense that is well under 5 yards per play. And you can understand, sometimes we'll see the big numbers like we were talking about, Liberty and UMass from 43 to 38. This is not one of those. Cincinnati opens up as a 32-point favorite, now up to 36. The power rating for Temple is at an all-time low at this point right now. And you can totally see why. And while their defense has at times been pretty admirable, it sucks to be behind the eight ball with an offense that cannot at all put together any sort of consistent drives, right? Now, it doesn't look like Russo is going to be available for this one either. And there has been a just carousel of quarterbacks, four different quarterbacks who have seen an action for Temple. So you can totally get why this number's gone from 32 to 36. Cincinnati had gone through a four-game stretch in which they had defensively shut down the likes right of SMU, Houston, Memphis. Why the Temple Owls would be any different, of course, remains to be seen, but don't think it would be. Northwestern, Michigan State. Also up on this, too, Northwestern. This is one, too, right, where we're talking about a Northwestern team potentially that's power rating is getting to the point where, I don't know if you want to call it too high, but it's getting to the point where the market has been really solid on this team, and, of course, you wonder if there is somewhere where you'd like to play against them. Right now, Northwestern, a 13.5-point favorite, or 13, depending on where you look. This opened up at Northwestern -9. This is an undefeated Northwestern team that has covered pretty much every number that they have either encountered or laid. So they have been a great spread team, too. So you wonder if at some point that comes to a head from their power ratings perspective, and it gets a little too high, right? You get a Michigan State team whose lowest moments this year have been because of self-inflicted wounds. The coming off of a game against Indiana, which, of course, the Hoosiers not really getting a ton of respect, only laying 7.5 and ultimately won that game 24-0. This Michigan State team's issues have been twofold, right? One, obviously, it's been the turnovers. The other, though, of course, has just been the offense in general, turnovers being part of it, but just the ineptitude of the offense as well. They've scored just 7 points over the last two games, Michigan State, and against a Northwestern defense that has been performing extremely well, right? You can understand driving this from 9 to 13.5. But at what point does the power rating and the numbers get a little too high? A Northwestern team which thrives and rolls, like catching points, especially at home, now you're asking them to lay 13.5 on the road against the Spartans. So that's a pretty big reversal there too, right? Maryland at Indiana. Also on this list, we talked about Cincinnati Temple, Northwestern, Michigan State, Maryland, Indiana, one we have covered extensively. Indiana here at the South Point, a 12-point favorite. Circa had Indiana at 11.5, opened up 15. Look, it has look ahead written all over it. But we also played you that psychopath Tom Allen's video from after the game against Ohio State. He clearly has the feeling of this team, right? Pushes all the right buttons, whatever cliche you want to use. That was a really well-played game against Ohio State. And a game, by the way, that if, you know, one or two plays goes a little bit differently, if you don't drop a pass on fourth down that was wide open to convert a first down in the first half, right? Certain little things like that, you don't know what happens as that game progresses on against Ohio State. This is a front seven that was getting after Justin Fields, forcing him to make mistakes, hitting him in the backfield as well. And what you're going to do against a Maryland team that has just not been good defensively, but does have like some, right, some lightning at the skill positions. We saw it in some spots, right? We saw it against Minnesota. We do see that there is some talent with these skill position players of Maryland. But what I find really funny about this is Indiana, you know, throughout this entire season has not gotten its due from a power rating and spread perspective, right? This is an Indiana team that has covered all five of the games in which it has played. And now finally, after the big spot against Ohio State, you potentially get the respect you're looking for from a power rating perspective. It opens up 15, but it's a massive look ahead spot. And now we're down to 12 or 11 and a half, depending on where you shop for your number. So this game is going to be one I think a lot of people are going to have their eyes on, because Indiana, while finally maybe getting the respect it deserves from a numbers perspective, it could be just the wrong spot to get it, considering the game you're coming off of. Bowling Green to Ohio, Ohio minus 28, down to 25. San Jose State and Boise State is going to be pretty good matchup in the Mountain West as well. San Jose State has been kind of a breath of fresh air in the Mountain West, man, and this has been a quality program for a while. And now you thought going into this year, well, you know, you're missing a lot of stuff, and you lose your quarterback, but you bring in Nick Starkle, who had done a pretty good job before getting hurt. Well, this San Jose State team has been everything as advertised up to this point, and now you get Boise State, a team that was laying 14 at the open, now down to about 11. Can totally understand this. San Jose State, I think, has some weaknesses defensively, which maybe Boise State, Hank Bachmeier and the company, can kind of exploit. But the offense for Boise State is legitimate. And I think the one part about Boise State, if you can expose, is actually going to be that secondary. Love what they have at linebacker, the defensive line, a little lacking in experience. You kind of saw it pop up in that BYU game, a little unfair. Of course, we know about what happened with that one, as you get a late scratch, or excuse me, an injury in that game of Jack Sears. But regardless, you can understand why San Jose State's getting action here, catching 14. An offense that's been explosive, no matter who has played quarterback for them up to this point, could potentially take advantage of a weakness that Boise State has. Also on this list, Texas Tech at Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State minus 13 at the open, down to 10, 10 and a half, depending on where you look. I guess kind of a similar spot to Indiana, right? The difference being that you weren't really in the game against Oklahoma. And so, like, this is like how your defense bounces back here against Texas Tech after a comfortable win for the Sooners, right? It's a kind of a letdown spot here against Tech, but you didn't lose in the same fashion as Indiana. So what this means for Oklahoma State going forward will be something to keep track of. Louisiana at UL Monroe. Louisiana from a 21-point favorite to 28.5. Nevada against Hawaii, one that Matt Humans, who's with us on Sunday and pointed out, called out. Nevada has a 2-point favorite. They open up to a full touchdown against the Rainbows. And then Memphis at Navy. Memphis from 11 to now 14 on the road against the Midshipmen. That does it for us here on The Edge. Make sure you stick around, of course. Betting Across America coming up next. Also, make sure you go to vsin.com/subscribe. Our college basketball guide is out, something that I think you're going to want to get your hands on as college hoop season tips off early tomorrow, too. So keep an eye on that if you're out here on the West Coast. vsin.com/subscribe, vsin.com/podcasts. If you missed out on any part of this show or any part of your favorite shows on the network, we'll see you tomorrow.